It's Sunday, May 26, 2024, and you're listening to episode 624 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 32 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Mary.
This is Doug.
And this is Wayne.
All right, so I have no idea exactly when this episode will air chronologically. There's a lot of jumble in the backlog that we're still trying to sort out. But the most recent news as of recording this is that the Fear the Con Kickstarter has fully funded. A huge thank you to all the people that participated in it, that made it successful. And when I say this, it feels so hollow, but you have no idea how true it is. I am always humbled to the point of almost discomfort at the amount of support that you folks show us. So I want to pause here to say huge thank you from the bottom of my heart for what you guys did to get this across the line. And we will do what we do every year, which is try to give you the best con experience you've ever had. And beyond that, we're going to have to be relying on you folks to bring some good attitude, some good game, ready to play, ready to run. We'll be running and playing too. And I'm really looking forward to it. Once again, if you've not marked your calendars, the Wing Knight and Mikey Mason Comedy Show is on Thursday, June 20th. The convention itself is on the 21st and 22nd. If the link to Con Planner and the game sign up is not up yet, it will be very soon.
It'll be by the time this drops.
Probably will be by the time this drops. Once again, we've got some gnarled backlog we're working through. All right, so topic for today, Wayne, this is something that's near and dear to my heart, so I am glad you brought it up because I've been doing a lot of self-reflection, contemplation, I don't know exactly what to call it. Now, I was not going to make it a show topic because it's too big and some of it's a bit too depressing to be a show topic, but you narrowed this down to something gaming related, so we are going to do that.
Yeah, and specifically, I want to give credit where it's due on this. I just finished a book that was, it was a Christmas gift that my mom had gotten me that was on my Amazon wish list for a while, which was Ray Bradbury's Zen and the Art of Writing. And it is a basically a series of essays that he wrote about writing over the course of his career. But what struck me as I was reading it was he was talking about the passion he has for writing. And he was talking about how he would write things specifically because he needed the paycheck. And it was never as good as when he would actually write something from the heart, something that meant something to him. And he could tell in what he got back as well, based on the feedback and all. And it really got me thinking about it, particularly for my hobbies. Like you, Dan, it's touching me in all aspects of my life. But specifically for gaming, because I'm supposed to be pitching games tomorrow.
Right.
Which I was supposed to pitch last week and the week before that. But hopefully it'll happen tomorrow.
Okay.
We'll see. But I looked at the games I was pitching and I was asking myself, why am I pitching these? What is it that I really enjoy about gaming? What is it that I really enjoy specifically about GMing? And do these pitches meet that? And as I looked through some of them, it's like, well, I am pitching this particular system not because I am excited about the game that I would present. I'm pitching it because I spent a ton of money on Kickstarter and I feel like I've invested in it and I want to get use out of this. Okay. And I realized that's not what I'm going to enjoy.
Yeah, I have a somewhat different problem in that for me, it's not sunk cost. I'm not chasing, I bought this and therefore I'm going to run it. 90-some-odd percent of the things I buy on Kickstarter, I buy purely for myself, knowing they are never going to see the light of day. For example, I have a ton of brand new Battletech stuff that I know apart from me by myself, possibly with an AI, is never going to get used, is never going to get played. And I've just come to accept that.
Yeah, I ask myself that hard question of what do I actually really enjoy about GMing? And I do some real self-evaluation. And I came up with a few things that are really important to me. I want to present a story and see what the players do with it. I build my story around the players, but that's important to me is to give them situations. I don't come up with how they're going to solve it. I don't come up with a solution. I give them a situation and just go along with the ride. And I enjoy that. I love NPCs. and building up the NPCs. So as I look at some of the games I was pitching, they're going to be travel games where I don't have NPCs. I'm going to have new NPCs they meet every session. And that isn't what I enjoy.
Okay, see, wait, I'm going to cut beneath this because I think what you're talking about here is specifics. I'm going to go to the general.
Okay.
Because I think, at least for me, and I'm going to guess for you as well, because you and I, in this regard, tend to be very similar. I think the biggest mistake I made in my gaming career, and I think it was a necessary mistake, I'll explain why in a second, is I compromised too much. There are too many things that I want to play, too many stories that I want to tell, and I'm not suggesting that it would be healthy for me to be the tyrant of the table, but I don't think I stand up for that and stand my ground well enough on the things that I want out of the gaming experience. And the caveat that I'll give there, the bit of excuse I'll give, is I think it was necessary because historically, most of my gaming groups have been very strong-willed. They have been very big personalities. And so saying it's got to be this or nothing, which that's kind of a dick thing to say anyway, but even that aside, that was never going to fly with these people. But I think in looking back, where I went wrong was I gave up too much in the pursuit of peace. I gave up really too much of what I wanted. And when I started playing around with running and playing games for an AI, which there will be more of that coming to the Patreon here in a little bit, one of the things that I felt that I was not planning to feel was I was like, holy crap, I can run whatever I want. All these stories that I have been sitting on in some cases for decades, I can finally run. You know, all these things that have been shot down. If I want to play, if I want to play an Injustice game where I'm Mr. Freeze, I can do that now. If I want to run for the AI a Battletech game that's, you know, set in one of my anti-clan guerrilla campaigns, I can do that now because this thing's going to agree to almost anything I suggest.
That is one of the advantages to online play as well, is whatever you want to run, there are people around the country or world that do want to play in it that you could get
to not show up or to have weird personality clashes.
True.
I mean, okay, I'm being cynical and bitchy here, but
I've actually experienced it somewhere. I've gotten to play things that I wouldn't get to play in my regular group.
Yeah, I mean,
because I don't have that many people local that want to play it, but I do.
Because we were talking about this at dinner. We were talking about the history of RPGs. We were talking about something called derived stats, which you were really big in the 80s and 90s. You don't see them that much anymore, but it would be something like, let's take D&D. So your strength is your strength, your dex is your dex, but your strength and dex together are your speed. I'm just making that up. The point being, that's a derived stat. And one of the places we got to talking about where those are really big is in Shadowrun. And I've played 1st through 3rd editions. I'll admit I haven't played 4th, 5th, or I think now there's a 6th. I've not played the more recent editions, but I did play 1st through 3rd. And you mentioned, Wayne, said that you had never played it because you know who's in your gaming group.
Well, it's more than just that. I'm also, I don't like cyberpunk.
Fair enough.
So I would never fight for it.
That's basically it.
Like, if I would have fought for it, we would have played it.
Right.
Because you would have had support, but I wasn't willing to fight for a campaign of something that there's a good chance I wouldn't like, but I do want to try it.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to play it. I just don't want to dedicate years to it.
I think where I fall on this is I look at, on the one hand, like you, I'm a storyteller at heart. I like telling stories. I like building characters. I like building worlds. But the stories that I am most passionate about almost invariably get vetoed. And so instead, I fall back to pitching the games, not that I want to run, but that I think the group will bite at. So I have a chance to run something or to at least get some portion of what I want. And that right there is where I've lost the joy of gaming.
So I look at some of the games I've played, and one of the things as a player that I want to do is I want to discover the world. I would get frustrated when, unless the system clearly defines it like inspectors, I would get frustrated when a GM would look at my success and ask me, what did you find? I want you to tell me what I found because I want to discover the world.
Yeah. Right. This is not discovery if I'm inventing it along the way. Right. What did you have in mind?
So
tell me.
As a player, that's something I want, is I want to discover the world. I'm realizing as a GM, I want to present the world, but I've gotten so into the yes and mentality and the communal building the world that I don't build my world until I have the player characters. I want to try a campaign where I don't do that. I wait for the characters for the story, but I want to build that world and let them explore the world. And instead of like what I would usually do, let's say you wanted to play some monk from a sect, I would have you define the sect and give me that. I don't want to do that for a change. And I think that's where I'm realizing I want to do more of what a typical old school GM would have presented.
Which is actually the part of running a game, which is why I don't run a lot, or it's not why I don't run a lot. I haven't run a lot because what I enjoy doing is the planning. I want to build the world. I want to make the sandbox. And then once I've gotten so far into the sandbox, it's like, well, it doesn't really matter to me much anymore if people play in it. It's the fact that I built it. Like, that's, I'm okay with that.
Me, on the other hand, what I really enjoy is building that sandbox and then seeing how they interact with it. Mm-hmm. I get enjoyment out of their seeing it for the first time, interacting, what they decide to do, and just those impressions that the players give in the world.
Yeah, this is where I develop some sympathy for the OSR, or the old school revolution, old school revival. It's got a couple takes on what that acronym stands for. And on top of that, you get a slightly different definition of what OSR means, depending on who you ask. And so I'm just going to pause right here and say, whatever you think OSR means is fine by me. But I've got to pick a meaning here. So what I'm going to go with is just that it's looking back to the yesteryear of gaming. It's looking back to the way that games used to be. And in some cases, I think there were some necessary corrections in later forms of role-playing to give things a bit more story, a bit more depth, a bit less pre-written structure that we're going to go to the color animal inn, then head to the dungeon, then get our loot, and then go, you know what? And I realize that's not all OSR is, so
we're simplifying
for yeah, I have to simplify. I have to simplify it down for the sake of discussion here. But I think there were some necessary course corrections that came in terms of deeper storytelling, collaborative storytelling, getting the players a little more off the bench than just swinging their swords. But I really do wonder if, to some extent, we let the factions, and I'm not blaming anyone else, so please don't anyone interpret it that way, but I wonder if, to some extent, we let the factions that really enjoy that kind of take over a bit too much.
Well, and I think there is a place for it. I think those types of games are fun. I do enjoy it.
Same. I'm not bashing those games.
I just don't want it every time.
Yes. And that's what I'm trying. It's going back to, was it Robin Hood, you know, Allah loves wondrous variety. And I wonder if we've just changed from improving our role playing to just falling into an equally tiresome rut.
Even when it works, there has to be a balance. I've had more than one Dresden Files game that I was excited about running kind of fall off the starting block because of the nature of starting that game is everybody is building the world. Like, what do we want in the game? What do we want to see in this? We're building the setting together. And by the time that's done, it's like, well, everything that I was really excited about has gotten, you're not interested in it, and you've told me that clearly. And now to focus on the things that you want, I have to kind of abandon everything I was excited about. So there's a balance somewhere in the player buy-in versus, you know, but my passion is over here.
Yeah, I think too often GMs will forget that they need to enjoy what they're doing as well as the players. You want to present the best game and the most fun game for the players, but if you're miserable, it's going to come through in your game. But yeah, so I had about 5 to 6 different ideas that I was trying to narrow down for pitching. And as I came to these realizations, I threw out all but one and started over. So I've got 3 completely different ideas that I'll be pitching now that I'm excited about. And I was lukewarm at best about every one of them that I was going to pitch because I wasn't playing to my own passion.
And is some of it a longevity thing? Are these games that you would be excited about for like a one-shot or a con game, just not something you want to run for months?
Yes, that's another thing I realized as I looked at some of these things. There is something there. I've spent a lot of money on some of these Kickstarter games. I do want to experience them. I don't want to dedicate 6 months to a year to it. I want to play a one-shot and see if I enjoy it. And if I enjoy it, maybe then I should think about running a full campaign in it.
So, Wayne, I wonder if you could define for me, and I don't want you to get too deep in the weeds, but why did you discard certain ideas? Can you explain that a bit? Of you looked at, you said it was originally, what, 4 or 5 ideas, and you discarded all but one. What were the ideas you discarded, and why? Once again, short version of the story, but I just want to get a sense of where you're coming from here.
Yeah, so I was looking through all of the systems I have that I hadn't run before, and some of those were ones I was going to pitch. I was going to pitch a Cowboy Bebop. I was going to pitch a Avatar Legends game.
Okay.
Because I've spent money on both, and I haven't played them.
Okay.
And the systems look fun, but I have no story for them. I don't have anything I was excited about for it. One of the other games, it was a space-based game in a solar system, but there was going to be a lot of traveling, and I realized they weren't going to be interacting with the same NPCs. I wasn't going to be building on anything. It was going to be
okay,
too much travel.
So one of them was too mobile. It didn't give you a chance to really world build. Okay.
Yep. Then I had another idea that I had developed a thought around it because I had a concept I wanted to play with. I love the idea of you're all humans from throughout history who have woken up on a spaceship, who have been abducted throughout time, and now the AI has helped you taken over the ship. And you don't know where Earth is. The AI was being deleted, so it's lost part of its memory.
This is kind of like the plot of Mothership Zeta from Fallout 3.
I actually never played it.
Huh.
Yeah, I never did the expansion.
It's not the exact same, but it's got some similarities.
But the idea is that the players then would be fully developed characters that then have to start learning how to pilot a spaceship, going from solar system to solar system, experiencing new civilizations and experiencing a new world. And the more I thought about that, I do like the idea. I think it would be a good story. And I don't think I would enjoy running a game in it because then I don't already have these civilizations developed. I don't have a overall plot for them. It's just experience, experience, experience. What I had was a reveal. The reveal was when they get back to Earth, Earth has been destroyed. And the whole thing they've been looking
for. It's now populated by monkeys.
No, it's dead.
Oh.
Yeah, everything, all life on Earth is dead. And then they have to decide what they want to do from there because their planet is gone. And I realized that could be an interesting story, but there's no game there for me. And it's like, what would they be doing? I would have a lot of repeating things as they try to figure out. And I don't want to keep having, you know, oh, something broke. You need to go down to a planet to get parts or resources and all. And it was one of those I realized it was an interesting idea to me, but it wasn't a game. And I was only pitching it because I thought it was an interesting idea. I wanted to run a game in space, but not that one. As I looked at these ideas, that's basically what I kept coming back to is, what is my passion? My passion is I want to develop something. Yeah. I want to develop a world. I want them in the world. I want them to be meeting NPCs and developing the NPCs around them. And none of those were getting that.
My real passion is I like to share stories. And I'm going to liken it to something, but then I'm going to separate it from what I likened it to. Ever gone out and seen a really cool movie and you're like, man, I got to grab so-and-so and we got to go see this movie together. Yep. This is totally going to blow them away because this is exactly what they're all about. And it's sort of like that in that I get these stories in my head. And it's like, man, I feel these are good stories based on my experience as a storyteller. I seem to have at least a decent eye for what is and isn't a good story, even if I wrote it. And so it's like, I want to share it with other people. Now, where I'm going to separate it is when I say that, it oftentimes gets misinterpreted that, well, what I really want is to write a novel or to dictate a script. And that's not the case. It really is about sharing that space in the story, which includes the fact that the players have agency and may surprise me and may take the story in very different directions. And like you, Wayne, that is one of my greatest pleasures as a game master, is seeing how people interact with the sandbox.
Yeah, what are they going to think of this concept?
Yeah.
One of the things I love when I get into a story that is just clicking that I'm writing is the characters tell me what needs to happen. Like, I am writing the story. Yes, I do know logically I am writing what the characters do.
I know what you mean.
But it feels to me like they have taken on a life of their own. I did not expect them to do this when I started writing. Running a game is the ultimate version of that, because in this case, the players actually are doing things that you didn't expect.
Yeah.
And they are interacting with the world and taking the stories in ways that you didn't expect.
Yeah, it's an observation I made about writing, and I realize now I'm moving back to a fixed media here. But it's something I realized in writing is I knew I had written a good character when someone else understood the character better than I did. Or someone saw things in the story that I did not put in there. And that's when I knew that I had gotten something right, was when people started interacting with it in ways that even I did not interact with it when I was creating it. And that's a very fixed medium. You know, I'm not taking their input. It's not a choose your own adventure, unlike a role-playing game. But I do feel the same thing in role-playing games, that when I throw out an NPC, and people latch on to that NPC in a way that I didn't, or people start to understand an NPC in a way that I don't, it really feels like that's the moment where I've succeeded on some level. There's some great filter that I've made it past, that I know I've got their buy-in because they care about it, and I know what I set up is good because it's resonating with them in ways that doesn't resonate with me.
So one of the things that during this conversation, I'm thinking about the things that really drive me and that I really enjoy connecting with as a GM. And I think rather than an NPC being latched onto by the characters or a specific aspect of a setting, I think for me, it is when I've crafted obstacles, whether mostly story obstacles, but something that makes me feel really good is when people are engaged enough not to walk away from a problem, but to thoroughly engage an issue and like find ways to overcome it that I never imagined, if I imagined any at all. Because a lot of times, if you haven't done that well, and I have not done it well a lot, people will just stop being interested in it. They'll walk away from it. They just don't care to keep trying, and you have to like push them to actually go through it. When they take it upon themselves, that's where like my GM happy place is.
Doug, how about you?
I'm sure you guys have said this in some other way, but sometimes I just like to put a scenario, like the one I thought of last night is, imagine if Willy Wonka was an NPC in your game, just to see the player's reaction to it and how he interacts with it, I guess.
Is that something that you feel that your current games are allowing you to do?
To some extent, yeah. One of the last games I did, I came up with this weird combat scenario with a little contraption, and I wanted to see their reaction to it. And it was kind of interesting. I'm looking more for how they react to it than how I pictured it, rather than I'm looking for their solution more so.
That's a big thing for me. Like, I love presenting situations that I can't think of a way out of. And it's not one of those adversarial things where I'm trying to get them. I legitimately want to see what they come up with to get out of it, because that's fun for me.
Right.
I know I can't think of every way to get past something, but I have a table full of people, and one of them is going to come up with something. Doesn't matter what situation I present, one of them will come up with some interesting idea to work through. And I encourage that. I look for it, because that's fun to me.
Yeah, you know, that's something that I think if I was trying to describe where things fell off for me, it was the loss of players that were not simply along for the ride, but were enthusiastically involved in the process. That I could sit down and say, hey, I've got a really good idea for this game. Let's get out there and play it. And I'm not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination this would be scripted, But to see them actually genuinely and enthusiastically want to collaborate and want to interact with that bit of the story element, whether that's the contraption in Doug's fight or whether that's the NPCs in your game or whether that's the general plot concept in mine or, you know, or Way McShoes and Mary's game.
Well, I mean,
those were great.
I want to point to the Skies of Glass AP as an example of why did it go so well? Because you had a couple of really enthusiastic players that told you, we want to play your game.
Well, yes, exactly. That's exactly it. Is everything on that game went right because I was able to tell the story I wanted to. The players enjoyed that. They were able to get involved in it. They stayed involved in it. They stayed engaged in it. There was a lot of energy around it. And yet, certainly, that game was not scripted. You know, that game was not cartoonishly railroaded.
No, and that game survived a lot of things that should have killed the game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, which I think is a sign of how strong that game and that idea were and how strong the investment and the enthusiasm were. And this is something that, you know, I realize this episode just sounds so mopey and bitchy. But
don't hear it that way.
No, really, to me,
For me, it's the opposite. For me, it's realizing that I need to go back to basics. I see it as a hopeful episode because now I know why I wasn't excited. Now I know what I need to do to go forward.
Right.
And I think that's the case where everyone should take away from it is re-examine yourself. Look at what you enjoy out of gaming and
find ways to get it.
Yes.
Yeah. And I could not agree more, Wayne. That is the but that I was going to follow up with her, as you nailed it exactly, is this episode probably sounds kind of mopey because, like, well, things used to be cool and we used to have more fun. And some of that's just the rose-colored glasses of hindsight. I get that. They've actually done clinical studies to show people remember the past with an overinflated positivity. And so I'm not unaware of these things. But to me, this episode, exactly like you said, Wayne, it's not simply looking back and being like, oh, gee, woe is me. My games aren't what they used to be. I wish that I had a damn great time. I'm going to find a way back there. And whether that's changing the way I pitch games, whether that's picking up a different gaming group, whether that's just saying, you know what, there are some of these ideas that maybe no one but ChatGPT-4 will agree to play, but damn it, I'm going to play these games. I'm going to tell these stories, and I'm going to do something with them. It really is a hopeful episode. It really is looking forward. Wayne, in your case, for example, you were talking about all the stuff you kickstart that you actually receive but can't play, and Fear the Con or any convention. That's a great place to whip out a game for a one shot and just see if it works or not. See
and
how
that
it plays.
Was the other realization I came to is some of these things I was going to pitch, I was pitching because the system looks fun. Fear the Con is a perfect place to experience the system.
I have both played games I have never played before and run games I've never run before at that convention. It is very friendly to it. I love that about it.
Well, and I've played games that I know I would never want to play as long-term campaigns, but loved when I was playing them at the con.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't remember what game it was, but a few years back, I said, there's no way I'd ever play something. And someone's like, all right, challenge accepted. If you come here with a positive attitude, I will make this game work for you. And I can't remember who it was or what game it was, but they did. They knocked it out of the park. It was really good.
I was in a game at Fear the Con with Mary that Xylo ran, and now he's cringing because I've said his name.
Of course.
Where Mary played the Mighty Little Biters, a group of cat musicians.
Yes.
You would not want to play that in a campaign, I'm sure.
No, not at all. But I had a lot of fun with it for those several hours.
Yeah, but I think this episode on some ways could feel a bit maudlin because of the fact that you have to look backward and see the problems and be honest about the problems. And sometimes that does evoke a little bit of sadness or wistfulness or I don't know.
Or even a little bit of resentment.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of resentment. They don't have that one bastard hadn't vetoed my game.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not where I'm at. It's more of this is kind of digging through it all to figure out a way forward. And I don't know exactly what that looks like. I've got some ideas, but...
Well, and it's going to absolutely be different based on every single person who sits down and thinks about it.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. I mean, I'm sure there are some people where maybe all they need to do is just switch products or... switch their genre, or I don't know what. I mean, everyone's situation is different. Or
that's why it's a very personal question of what do you enjoy out of GMing?
Yeah.
Because it's not the same thing for everyone.
Or playing if you're a player. If you're primarily a player, what is it you enjoy about RPGs? Are you getting it? And if not, then what is the best path forward to a place where you do get that again?
Yeah.
So I guess we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. Once again, the huge and very humble thank you for everyone that contributed to Fear the Con. Whether you contributed or not, once again, it is a ticketless convention. That means you are welcome to show up, to run games, to play games, to participate in the convention.
To enjoy wings on Thursday.
Yeah, all you have to pay for is your cost of living to get there and stay there. Individual events might charge something, like if you're in a Magic like draft tournament or something. Yeah.
Or a charity game.
Or a charity game. But we as a convention do not charge you anything in terms of a ticket fee. We just want you to show up and to throw dice and to have fun. So we're really looking forward to seeing everyone in a little bit. And other than that, have a great week and great games. And we will catch you next time.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2024. Listeners are free to use this episode in a non-commercial endeavor, so long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. If you wish to support this show and its related endeavors, you can do so at patreon.com/feartheboot.